guy and offering you a ride.
I don't believe that for a minute. I think you'd offer any employee a ride home. You just don't want people to know that about you. Besides, you barely even noticed what I looked like the night we met, and you drove me home. Rush lit a cigarette and sucked in a long drag of smoke. Blowing it out the window, he turned to me.
White t-shirt with a V-neck that laced up, black bra underneath, denim jeans with a rip in one knee, the left, to be specific, hair down, loose and wavy, glasses.
My mouth dropped open. He just perfectly described what I wore the night we met, down to the bra I hadn't even realized was visible under my shirt. Rush glanced over and caught the surprise on my face.
Glasses were sexy as shit, by the way. You should wear them more often.
I laughed. I think you have a really good memory, and your motives were more altruistic than you want me to believe. He puffed his cigarette.
Suit yourself, but I'm showing you a wolf, and yet you still want to see me as the sheep.
Rush's cell rang. Glancing at the name flashing, he said it was a liquor distributor he'd been trying to reach, and he had to take it. Of course, he broke the rules of the road and spoke holding the cell to his ear instead of on hands-free. I looked out the window while he argued with someone over how many cases of vodka were delivered. We just merged onto the Long Island Expressway and had another 2 hours of drive time in front of us. When I'd asked Rush this morning if I could hop a ride with him to the city, it was mostly a ploy to spend more time with him. But now that it was getting closer to surprising my dad for lunch, I was really excited about it. It had been at least 2 months since I'd seen him. We talked on the phone every few days, but we normally didn't go this long without spending time together. When Rush hung up, I was still thinking about my father. I said, "When I was a kid, my dad and I used to take a road trip every summer." He tossed his cell on the dashboard.
"Oh, yeah? Where'd you go?"
I shrugged. "Nowhere fancy. We didn't have a lot of money, but Dad always made sure we got a vacation in. Sometimes it was Pennsylvania, sometimes Maine. A few times we even drove down to Florida. We used to play car games the entire trip. I'm not even sure if they were real games or if Dad made them up."
"What, like the license plate game where you have to find all the states?"
"No, they were always games where we had to make up stories and stuff. My favorite was Fortunately, Unfortunately." Rush glanced over at me and back to the road.
"Never heard of it."
"One person would say something fortunate that starts with fortunately, and then the next person would have to make up something unfortunate about the previous situation. If you stumble giving the unfortunate story to go with the fortunate story, you get a strike. 3 strikes, and the other person wins."
"I don't get it."
"Like this." I tapped my finger to my lip and stared out the window as we drove until I thought of something. "Fortunately, Rush was going into the city today, and I could hitch a ride. Now you have to come up with the next part, relating to my part, and your sentence has to start with unfortunately. Go ahead, give it a try." "I'll say mine again. Fortunately, Rush was going into the city today, and I could hitch a ride." Rush grinned as he continued to keep his eyes on the road.
"Unfortunately, Gia remembered this stupid fucking game and ruined the ride into the city."
"That's it. That's how it goes, except you're a jerk." Rush chuckled. "I'm starting over now that you got the hang of it." I smiled. "Fortunately, Rush missed his date last night, which meant he was spared a hideous case of the crabs." He shook his head.
"Unfortunately, he now had blue balls and will be needing to borrow the ice pack that Gia used after her barroom brawl last night."
I kept it going. "Fortunately, Rush has a strong right hand and can take care of that problem easier than clearing up an STD.
Unfortunately, Rush's dick knows the difference between beating off and being inside a woman."
I laughed. "You're really good at this. In a twisted sort of way."
"Oh, yeah? Just wait. On the way home, I'm going to start all the stories, and I've got nothing better to do than sit in my board meeting all day and think of warped shit for you to have to answer later."
Why was I sort of looking forward to that? As we continued to drive, it dawned on me that I'd been spending all of this time with Rush and didn't even know his last name. I turned to him. Hey, I never asked, what's your last name? His jaw tensed.
That's kind of a random question.
Yeah, well, I just realized it's a little weird that I don't know. He let out a harsh breath.
You don't need to know my last name.
You slept in my bed last night. I think the least you could do is tell me your last name. Besides, it's not like I couldn't just ask someone at work what it is.
Actually, the only one who knows is Oak, and he's been given strict instructions not to give it out to anyone. That includes you, Gia Mirabelli.
Oh my God, that's so shady, I laughed. Why?
Because people don't need to know my fucking business.
It's your name. That's hardly private information.
It is to me.
I leaned in a little. My voice was low and sexy. Come on. Tell me.
No,
he spewed. Why? Silence. More silence. He wasn't even answering me anymore. I was becoming more and more curious by the second. I devised a plan that I hoped would work. When I started to wave at the driver of a big rig next to us, he yelled,
What the hell are you doing?
If you don't tell me your name, I'm gonna flash that trucker. The driver honked at me and smiled. I really wasn't going to go through with it, but Rush had no way of knowing that. His Mustang swerved a little.
You wouldn't do that.
My eyes widened. Oh yeah? Watch me. A vein in his neck popped as I began to lift my shirt. Either he was going to tell me his last name or he was going to crash the car. Just as the material was almost all the way up, Rush blurted it out.
My name is Heathcliff Rushmore.
He expended a breath and grumbled.
Fuck.
Heathcliff Rushmore? Heathcliff Rushmore. I covered my mouth. Oh, my, that's interesting. He looked so angry at himself.
Happy now?
I beamed. Yes, actually, I am. I repeated to myself. Heathcliff Rushmore. Heath. Rushmore.
I was named after my grandfather.
I snapped my finger. So, that's why you go by Rush? He feigned surprise.
Wow, you're really smart.
Shut up, I laughed, then said, Thank you for telling me. He flashed a hesitant smile.
You didn't give me much of a choice, brat.
Chapter 8 Heathcliff, it's good to see you, son. My father patted my back, interrupting the conversation I was in the middle of with Gerald Horvath, my grandfather's attorney, and always the only friendly face in the room toward me. Edward, I nodded. My father and brother hated my existence, but appearances were important to them. Disdain hid under a masked smile when anyone was around, especially when that anyone had voting power, as Gerald did. Grandfather's attorney had just given me the dirty details of the purpose of today's meeting. Vanderhaus owned commercial real estate all over Manhattan, and today's vote was to approve a large property sale without disclosing certain things to the buyer. The board was at odds. My brother, Elliot, and father held 49% of the company's voting power and were always a united front. I held 25%, something I'm sure grandfather had decided on strategically. Individually, my brother and father each held 24.5%, so my vote outweighed theirs. But united, they could bulldoze their way through many votes, since they only needed to snag 1% to have a majority. Apparently, the vote today was David versus Goliath, and they hadn't been able to secure anyone's commitment to vote with them yet. Your brother and I would love to catch up if I could steal you away from Gerald for a few minutes. Gerald knew the blood between the three of us ran thin, but bowed out graciously as always. Sure, no problem. I see a cheese Danish calling my name over there before we start anyway. Once Gerald was out of earshot, my loving father's mask slipped down just as Elliot joined us. How much will it take for you to vote with us? My father had always assumed me and my mother were all about money. It was incomprehensible to him that someone without any would put their morals and self-respect ahead of making a quick buck. I sipped a bottled water. Let me get this straight. You bought a flailing nursing home that the community very much needed. I pointed to my brother. I'm guessing you're the one who negotiated the purchase by promising the seller that you had every intention of keeping the facility open, but somehow that promise didn't make its way into the contract. Then you demolished the place, along with a few other houses you bought surrounding it, all to make room for an 8-story mall that you could fill with a bunch of overpriced chain stores. My brother looked me up and down. He must have sucked on a lemon that left his face like that right before he walked over to our lovely chat. I'll tell you what, he said. You swing your vote our way, and I'll make sure we rent space to a decent, moderately priced men's suit chain and see to it that you get a 25% discount. I smiled and continued, not bothering to trade personal jabs with my arrogant half-brother. I wasn't quite finished with my story. Then you find out that the soil underneath the building you just tore down is contaminated with lead and a whole list of other toxins. That it will cost you upwards of $1 million to clean it up, not to mention building delays and dealing with the DEP. Now that the mall is out of the question, you want to sell the property to another nursing home company that is interested in building a new facility on the site, and you have no plans to disclose what you found to the buyer. Don't be naive, my father scolded. This is the business world we're in. Not some tattoo parlor where you decide not to mar the skin on a drunken girl's ass because she isn't in the right frame of mind to have that rose she's always wanted tattooed on her left cheek. It's caveat emptor. Buyer beware. We have no legal obligation to coddle a buyer. No legal obligation. What about an ethical one? You're being ridiculous. Do you know how much money we all stand to lose if we are forced to keep this land and go through with this cleanup? It was the company's mistake in buying the land without testing the soil. It's the company that should pay for it. From what I heard, the nursing home that sold you the property had an environmental study done before they built the place 60 years ago. They'd have no way of knowing what seeped into the soil from the surrounding gas stations over the years. And if you would have kept the property a nursing home, like you told the community you'd planned to, the issue wouldn't have reared its ugly head either. My brother buttoned his jacket and looked at our father. I told you it was a waste of time to try to make him understand business. You can take the tattooed boy out of the hood, but you'll never take the hood out of the boy. He turned to me. With this type of loss and the way I'm sure you'll run the other businesses grandfather left you into the ground, you'll be back to tattooing criminals in no time. I winked at my brother. Not the drunk ones. Remember, I'm the upstanding brother who believes in not tattooing roses on their asses. Luckily for me, the secretary called the board meeting to order. For the next 2 hours, we all sat around listening to my father and brother bullshit everyone. I had to hand it to them. They spun such a good tale for a minute, I almost believed that voting with them to endorse the sale without disclosing the property contamination was in the best interest of the community. We broke for a break before the formal vote, and I went outside to have a cigarette. Oddly, it was easier to breathe with nicotine-laced, thick smoke filling my lungs than it was in that fancy boardroom. On the way back to the meeting, I found my brother down a quiet hall with a woman. I almost didn't notice it was him, seeing as his entire face was buried in the woman's neck, a woman who wasn't his wife. Such a piece of shit. He strolled into the meeting at the last minute chatting with a board member and wearing his usual smug smile. I'd seen the board member a few times. I remembered she was the heir to some fortune her dead husband had left and had a British accent. Maribel something was her name. They both took their seats, diagonally across from each other, and the meeting resumed. Not having gotten a good look at the woman from the hall, I really hoped it wasn't her and he wasn't screwing a board member. All right, let's get this over with, my father said. This is a public vote. The secretary here has everyone's voting power on his laptop, so all we need to do is hear a yay or a nay on the sale. He'll tally up the results when we're done. The secretary then proceeded to call off names and people voted. No, no, No. No. After the fourth member voted no, I looked over at my brother. He didn't look at all concerned. When it was my turn, my father shot me a look of disgust for voting my conscience. Every member voted no, until we got to the one remaining vote, aside from my father and brother, the woman who walked in with my brother. She looked over at him before casting her vote. Fuck. Her eyes hooded, and upon closer look, her swollen lips confirmed she was the woman from the hall. Maribel Stewart, your vote?
Yes.
Fuck. All they needed was one person to vote with them. I stayed in my seat until everyone but my brother and father cleared out of the room. My brother's face was so self-righteous I had the urge to rearrange it for him. I don't know how you sleep at night, I said.
I have a $10,000 bed fit for a king, Elliot grinned.
I stood. I'd rather sleep on the floor and have a clear conscience. He fixed his tie and looked up at me.
Fitting. The floor is where you belong.
All worked up after the encounter with my dysfunctional family, I texted Gia to see where she was at.
Rush, where are you?
She responded a few seconds later.
Gia,
at Ellen's Stardust Diner on Broadway, having some lunch. They have the best French toast.
Rush, I'm heading over there.
Since I'd parked my car in a garage for the day, I hopped a cab to the restaurant. The meeting with my father and Elliot was still running through my mind, and I needed to calm the fuck down. I needed to see Gia. I knew she'd make me feel better, even though it was frustrating to admit that to myself. Having to curb the urge to smoke in the cab, I rolled down the window and let the cool air hit my face. I thought about Gia's conning me into telling her my name. That little witch knew my weakness. She knew my jealousy knew no bounds, and she knew exactly how to manipulate that. That was a dangerous talent. But damn, it worked. I couldn't help but laugh to myself. She got me. Well played, Gia. Well played. The cabbie was looking at me through the rearview mirror.
Something funny? He asked in a Jamaican accent.
Busted. Nah, just thinking about a woman who makes me a little crazy. Nodding and understanding, he said,
"Yeah, man. Don't they all?"
He dropped me off and I entered the diner, which was retro-themed with vinyl red booths and neon lights. One of the servers, dressed in a poodle skirt from the 50s, was standing on top of one of the booths singing. She was probably a wannabe Broadway actress. It didn't surprise me one bit that Gia had chosen this place. It was eccentric, just like her. What did surprise me was to find her sitting in a booth across from an NYPD officer. Before I could draw the conclusion that she was getting herself in trouble for doing something stupid, I noticed she seemed to be smiling and laughing.
A cop? What the hell?
My fists tightened. A rush of adrenaline hit me until I got closer and realized who it was from the resemblance alone. She had said she was planning to meet her father. Shit, her father. I felt like a dumbass now. With everything that happened back at Vanderhaus, I became distracted and had totally forgotten she was meeting him. I definitely wouldn't have come here if I remembered she was with her dad. It was too late to turn back. She spotted me. So did he.
You could have told me, Gia.
She was smiling from ear to ear and waved me over to their booth. Gia seemed completely comfortable with this situation, which was the opposite of how I was feeling right now.
Hey,
she said. Placing my hands in the pockets of my jeans, I nodded once.
Hi.
This must be Rush, her father said.
She'd told him about me?
Yes, Dad, this is Rush, she turned to me. Rush, this is my dad, Tony Mirabelli. Her father looked like he was in good shape for someone I'd put in his early 50s. They both had the same blue eyes that contrasted their dark hair and olive skin. I took one hand out of my pocket and extended it.
Nice to meet you, sir.
His handshake was firm while his eyes fell to the tattoos on my arm. He nudged his head toward the table.
Sit. Join us.
I looked over at Gia. I'm thinking maybe I should come back when you're done with your dad. I don't want to interrupt. I have a few errands I could run. Tony answered for her.
Nonsense. Take a seat.
His tone was not exactly casual. It was more demanding, like, sit the fuck down, motherfucker. I no longer felt that I could get out of this situation, so I conceded and planted myself next to Gia. There was a huge plate of half-eaten French toast in front of her. Her father's plate was clean. A waitress came by and placed a menu in front of me. "Can I get you anything?" I hadn't eaten all day, but didn't feel like making myself too comfortable here, so I said, "Just coffee, black." My eyes landed on his. Tony was staring at me intently. For some reason, the theme to The Sopranos started playing in my head. Probably the name Tony triggered it. The opening sequence where Tony Soprano is driving over the bridge to Jersey flashed through my mind. That was exactly where I wanted to be, driving over a bridge to Jersey and not staring this man in the face right now. There weren't many things that made me nervous. But sitting across from a man who's looking at you like he knows you want to spread his daughter's legs apart and eat her out is definitely one of them, especially when the dude is packing a pistol. He folded his hands together and tilted his head to the side. His expression suddenly turned serious. In fact, he looked pissed. "My daughter tells me you punched her in the eye." My heart started to pound faster. A long moment of silence passed as I just sat there speechless. "She what? What in the ever-living fuck?" Then, Gia snorted. Tony looked at her, and they both busted out into laughter. "Am I being punked?" "I'm just kidding, son." He wiped his eyes. "It was a joke." They were both assholes. My pulse finally calmed down. "Can't believe I fell for that." "He knows the truth about what happened," she said. I looked him dead in the face. If I had been there to monitor things, she wouldn't have gotten that black eye. "I'm sorry she got hurt." He simply nodded. "We were just talking about you before you walked in," Gia said. Must have been why my ears were ringing. Tony turned to me. "I hear you gave Gia a job and that you make sure she's safe in getting home at night. I never really loved the idea of her moving out there all alone and so far away from me when I have no choice but to be here for work. But you know Gia. She has a mind of her own, couldn't be stopped. So I really appreciate any help I can get in looking out for her." I felt like a fraud. My thoughts when it came to Gia were far from safe. Nevertheless, I took credit. "No problem. It's my pleasure." He brushed a piece of food off his Navy uniform. "I raised my daughter to be smart and independent, but there's only so much she can do to protect herself. I worry about her, particularly because she can be hot-headed like her dad. She can be minding her own business one minute and breaking up a bar fight the next." "Well, I can definitely agree with you on that one," I chuckled. "Gia is definitely spirited." Gia winked at me. She seemed to be enjoying this interaction, whereas I was watching the clock rearing to leave. The waitress set a glass of water and a steaming mug of coffee in front of me. I took a sip of the hot liquid. Tony was just watching me and then caught me off guard when he said, "So, that being said, in all seriousness, what exactly are your intentions when it comes to my daughter?" I nearly spit out my coffee. A long moment of silence passed before they once again turned to each other and burst into laughter. These two were in cahoots, a couple of pranksters. Tony cackled and pointed. "I love the look on your face." "Don't worry," Gia said as she placed her hand on my forearm. "He knows you're not interested in me and that you're harmless, despite how dangerous you might look." Leaning her shoulder against mine, she said, "Right, Rush? He has nothing to worry about." She batted her eyelashes at me. I swallowed. "That's right." "The better to eat you with, my dear," said the big bad wolf. She addressed her father. "Rush says because he's my boss, we can't date." He took a sip of water, then said, "Well, that's smart, I suppose. Never hurts to keep things professional." I glared at Gia. "I completely agree." "Although you're probably kidding yourself," Tony said. "I see the way you look at my daughter, and I'm not sure I like it, to be honest." My eyes narrowed. Shit. He must have sensed the worry on my face when he said, "Man, you're gullible." He was fucking with me again. Gia and her dad were once again laughing at me, two peas in a pod. "You want to know the truth, son?" I let out a long breath. "Sure." I did my best to lead by example as far as my daughter is concerned.
Show her what a good, decent, hard-working man is like. I trust her judgment. So, if Gia feels that someone is worthy of her time and trust, then that's enough for me, whether it's a friend or more. Who she associates with, well, it's not my decision to make anymore. I nodded once. All right. Plus, I ran a full background check on you a little while ago as soon as she told me about you. Came up clear. He grinned. Heathcliff Rushmore. Interesting name. Thanks a fucking lot, Gia. Gritting my teeth, I said, it's a family name. Speaking of family, your father is Edward Vanderhouse. Hearing him mention that name made my skin crawl. I'm quite aware of that, yes. He's my biological father, but he didn't raise me. I was on patrol once for a private event in the city that Vanderhouse booked. He's kind of a dick, no offense. None taken, and believe me, I'm quite aware of that. I sighed. What did he do? It wasn't so much what he did, just the way he spoke to people, you know? Just my observation. Yep, I know exactly what you mean. Gia was telling me everything about your inheritance. You don't have to go into it. Very interesting story, though, to say the least. I turned to her. Did you talk about anything other than me today, Gia? She shrugged. Sorry, but I tell my dad everything. I can see that. I offered a slight smile so she didn't actually think I was mad at her. I could have cared less what her father knew. I had nothing to hide. The waitress came by to refill my coffee and warmed Tony's, too. He gulped some of it down, then said, "Sounds like you've done the best you can with all you've been given, son, the good and the bad. At heart, I'm still a blue-collar guy from Long Island. I saw how hard my mother struggled. I never expected things to be handed to me. I still work hard and don't take anything for granted." "Well, this poor boy from Queens finds that admirable," Gia interrupted. "He's fixing my car for me, too, Dad." "You know your way around cars?" "Yeah, I used to work in an auto repair shop." Tony seemed impressed. "No kidding." "He also used to be a tattoo artist," Gia said. "I asked him if he could ink me, but he refuses." "Sounds like he knows you can be a little impulsive. Good call, Rush." I almost wish Gia's dad were more of a dick. It would give me another good reason to stay away from her. He'd raised her all on his own and seemed to have done a hell of a job. I hated to say it, but Tony was cool as shit. The kind of man I wished I had for a father. He looked down at his watch. "Well, as much as I'd love to stay with you, sweetheart, work beckons. I've got to get back to the precinct." Gia pouted. "All right, Daddy. I'm glad we got to see each other." She stood up and gave him a hug. He held out his hand. "Rush, it was a pleasure. Stay out of trouble." He gave me a look, and for some reason that one seemed serious. "Stay out of trouble." Translation, stay out of Gia.
Chapter 9. Rush had asked if I was in a hurry to return to the Hamptons. Since it was my night off, I told him there was no reason I had to get back by a certain time. After we left Ellen's, he said he wanted to get something to eat, which was odd because we'd just spent the last hour at a diner. Apparently, it wasn't that he hadn't wanted to eat at the restaurant, but that he had his heart set on Gray's Papaya hot dogs. We left Gray's with a bag full of wieners. Rush walked and ate at the same time.
"Whenever I come to the city, I just have to have one," he said, biting into the hot dog, which was loaded with chili and cheese.
"One! You ordered 10!
"They're not all for me,"
Rush said with his mouth full. "Who are they for?"
"Some friends. You'll meet them in a bit."
I was going to meet his friends? He held up his hot dog.
"Want a bite?"
"I'm full, thanks." The sun was coming down over the city. It was a gorgeous evening. About 15 minutes later, we stopped at an alleyway, and I immediately figured out who his friends were. Rush had taken the bag of hot dogs to a few homeless men who were gathered in the alley with their belongings stuffed into black trash bags.
"Hey, guys."
One of them seemed to recognize him.
"Hey, Rush, man. How's it going?"
"What's good?"
Rush asked, handing the entire bag over to him.
Nothing. You know, the usual. Thought you might be hungry. Starving, thank you, the man said. Who's your pretty friend? This is Gia.
I waved. Hello? Rush then reached into his wallet and handed the guy a $100 bill.
Promise me you won't spend it on booze. You got it. I promise.
Rush pointed his two fingers to his eyes and then back at the man.
I'm watching you, Tommy. Take care of yourself, okay?
As we walked away, I whispered, "That was really nice of you." He waited until we were no longer within earshot of the men to say,
"A long time ago, I decided that a good way to wash away the negativity I feel toward my family's greed is to counter it with something charitable. I told myself every time I come to the city for an obligatory business meeting that I'd help someone in some way before I leave. It makes me feel good."
That's really commendable.
Nah, I have the means. I don't even feel a dent. It would only be commendable if it were a sacrifice. Not like I'm giving anyone the shirt off my back.
I don't agree. It's the thought that counts, no matter how much money you have. You're a good guy, Rush, and you would give anyone the shirt off your back if they needed it. I've only known you for a short time, but I have no doubt about that. His ears seemed to turn red. I was learning that Rush wasn't comfortable taking compliments. He stopped for a moment.
Anywhere you want to go before we head back.
Starting to feel tired, I said, I think I'd just like to go home. I have to write tonight. We started walking again when he asked,
How's it coming, anyway? The book?
I sighed. It's not really coming. His mouth twitched and he looked tense. What's up? I asked.
You said coming. I lost my train of thought for a second.
Forgot I have to be careful with my words around you, I winked.
Seriously, though, he said. Why do you think you're having so much trouble focusing?
I just can't stop the self-doubt. I second-guess every word and erase what I wrote half of the time. It's awful. Rush scratched his chin.
Why don't you try to write as if no one is going to read it? Just say, fuck it, and stop overthinking it. I bet if you go back and read what you wrote afterward, you'll find it's not even that bad. Having something down on paper is better than nothing at all.
I pondered his advice. So, pretend that no one will ever see it.
Yeah. If you find yourself stopping to think too much, just keep going. Push through it. Worry about it later. Write the first thing that comes to mind and trust your instinct. You're probably a way worse judge of yourself than anyone.
He nudged me with his shoulder.
Anyway, who cares what people think? Write what you like. I bet it will turn out that's what other people will like, too.
Nodding, I considered his advice. I'll try to adopt that approach. His words repeated it in my mind and prompted me to say, But that's pretty ironic coming from you, don't you think?
What part is ironic?
Who cares what people think? This from the guy who refuses to date an employee for fear of what everyone will think? He slowed his pace, looking a bit pissed at me for bringing this up.
It's not about what people think so much as the principle of the matter. As a business owner, you don't date someone you employ. It's unethical. It's also ripe pickings for a lawsuit, and that's a headache I sure as hell don't need.
But it's okay for you to sleep in my bed. That comment seemed to anger him even more.
No, that's not okay. That was a mistake.
The question that had been on the tip of my tongue somehow slipped out against my better judgment. What if I got another job? Would that change things? He seemed to be struggling with how to respond to that. I braced myself because I knew the answer to that question was a game changer. It would prove his true feelings once and for all. Rush reached into his pocket for a cigarette before lighting up. It had seemed like he was making a conscious effort not to smoke, up until I drove him to it just now. His eyes almost looked pained when he said,
I like hanging out with you, but I'm not right for you, Gia.
Then the boss thing is just an excuse. It's really not the reason you won't date me.
It's not the only issue. No. The issue is me, not you.
I rolled my eyes. It's not you, it's me. What an original line. I should put that in my sucky book. My little interrogation must have angered Rush more than I knew because he was quiet the rest of the walk to the parking garage. Once we got to the car and on the road, the silent treatment continued as he proceeded to just smoke the entire time. I was mad at myself for bringing up the subject of our relationship. He'd made his intentions clear, and I had to accept that. But there was still the fact that I wasn't sure if I fully believed he didn't want more with me. He was clearly attracted to me and protective of me. Was he scared? Or just not interested? It didn't matter. As soon as he pulled the old, "It's not you, it's me," I was done. I couldn't stand the quiet anymore, so I was the first to speak. You said we were going to play Fortunately, Unfortunately on the ride back.
Yeah, well, I'm not in the mood right now.
Ignoring him, I said, okay, I'll start. Fortunately, one of us doesn't stay angry for very long and knows how to break the ice. He gave me side-eye and surprised me when he started to play along.
Unfortunately, Gia decided to break the ice by reminding me of this stupid game.
He shook his head and blew smoke out the window. Fortunately, Gia's not sensitive. Otherwise, you calling her game stupid would have upset her.
Unfortunately, I think Gia is sensitive and takes certain things personally when she really shouldn't.
Fortunately, Gia doesn't have to be told twice, so you don't have to worry about her inquiring about the status of our relationship anymore ever again. He lit up another cigarette before he said,
unfortunately, I think that's for the best.
Fortunately, I now understand that we are, in fact, just friends. His expression dampened. A few seconds passed before he responded with,
unfortunately, I have to apologize for my actions that have led you to believe otherwise.
Fortunately, for you, I forgive you.
Unfortunately, this means I can't sleep in your bed anymore, either.
I admired his apology, but that didn't stop me from wanting to stick it to him. Fortunately, now that you've made your feelings clear, this frees me up to accept the date I've been putting off with Reese, the roof bartender.
Chapter 10. Bring the kegs up to the rooftop bar. I snapped at the shadow of a man passing by my office. The hall was dark, but I knew exactly who it was. The asshole had been on my radar ever since Gia dropped a bomb in the car on the way home from the city.
Me?
Reese took a step back into the doorway of the office. I didn't bother to lift my head from the paperwork I had my nose buried in. Who the fuck else would I be talking to? Is there another person in the vicinity? I still didn't look up. Oak usually carries them upstairs. Those things weigh 160 pounds. Of course, I knew exactly what they weighed, and I was pretty sure that the things outweighed his skinny ass. I looked up, my bloodshot eyes beaded with contempt. Are you saying you're incapable of performing your job?
No. I'll get them up there.
He continued to stand there, staring. Are you waiting for something? I bit out. Get to work.
Sure, right. Yes, boss.
Even though he said that, when he saw me get up and head over to the door, the pansy ass stayed frozen in place. For a heartbeat, when his eyes grew wide and I thought he might shit his pants, I almost felt bad for the guy. Almost. Though that notion wore off before I slammed the door in the fucker's face. For the last 3 days, I'd managed to avoid Gia. I'd been planning a renovation of one of the rental properties I owned out here, and the permits finally came through from the town. While the demolition crew I hired ripped out the dated kitchen and back deck, I spent most of the days meeting subcontractors to get quotes on doing the remodel. Even though I could afford the extra cost of hiring a GC to do that type of shit, I like to manage my own construction projects. And God knows I could use the fucking distraction from spending all my time watching over Gia at this place.
My cell phone rang, and the first genuine smile I had in days appeared on my face. I sat back into my chair while I answered.
Well, if it isn't the birthday girl.
Sleep in? I called you 2 hours ago.
I was actually out getting supplies, my mother said.
The phone rang while I was driving, and I don't know how to hook up the hands-free thing. You'll have to do that for me this weekend.
All right.
I bought a new set of acrylics and some extra canvas.
I'm hoping the sunset is as beautiful as it was last year out there.
The weather is supposed to be nice. When are you coming out?
This afternoon, if you don't mind. I know I usually come out on Friday, but I need to get back early to help out at the summer cookout they're having at church.
Of course. Whatever you want. You're welcome anytime. You know that.
Let yourself in when you get here, and I'll try to be home early from the restaurant. I'll bring home a nice birthday dinner with me.
Actually, I was thinking of coming to the restaurant for the sunset tonight to paint, if that won't interrupt your busy time or anything. I won't take up much room, just a chair in the corner of the rooftop bar. I don't even need to bring my easel.
Bring anything you want. I'll close the fucking place if having other people around distracts you.
Heathcliff, your language.
I was transported back to being 10 again.
Sorry.
I'll try to watch my mouth. But can you lay off the Heathcliff around my place of business? No one knows my name is anything other than Rush.
I'm like Madonna, only with a bigger di- Never mind. Just call me Rush at work, please, Ma.
Okay, sweetheart. I'll see you in a few hours.
It was almost 5 by the time I emerged from my office. I hated to sit behind a desk all day, which was the primary reason it took me the entire afternoon to catch up on all the paperwork I'd been avoiding. The kitchen staff had arrived and were here prepping for the start of the dinner rush when I stopped in.
I need something that isn't on tonight's menu made, probably for about 7 o'clock.
Sure thing, Rush. What do you need?
Fred, the head chef, asked. He'd been my first hire when I took over the place 5 years ago.
Salmon Oscar, just like he used to make at McCormick and Schmick's.
He pointed a pair of tongs in his hand at me and smiled.
You got it. Whatever you're in the mood for.
It's actually not for me, but I appreciate it. I'll probably just order a burger to eat later.
Hot date? It's my mom's birthday. She'll be here in a little while.
Fred winked.
I'll make it better than I made it when I worked at McCormick and Schmick's then.
I figured I'd head upstairs to section off a little area for my mom to paint before she got here. Thursdays were busy, but usually more so after the dinner rush ended. By then, the sunset would be long gone, and she wasn't a late-night person anyway. Climbing the stairs 2 at a time with a cushioned indoor chair in my hand, I hit the rooftop and froze. We hadn't opened yet, but my staff was busy setting up tables and stocking the outdoor bar. Everyone bustled around getting ready except for my bartender, Reese. Instead of working, he had his forearms resting on the bar while he flirted with a woman, and not just any woman. The smiling asshole was standing there flirting with my girl. Fury pumped through my veins as I stood there watching. Reese said something I couldn't hear, and Gia threw her head back, laughing.
Fuck. She was so beautiful when she smiled.
As if she sensed me watching her, Gia's head turned and our eyes caught. She straightened her spine and jutted her chin out, almost daring me to do something about whatever I'd just walked out to see. She isn't even on tonight. What the fuck is she doing here? It took every bit of willpower I had in me to not walk over there and punch the little peckerhead she was talking to in the face. But somehow I managed to control myself. Taking a deep breath, I didn't acknowledge her. Instead, I went about my own business. I pulled a table over to the corner that had the best sunset views, stuck a reserve sign on it, and then set up a comfortable chair so my mom would have a place to paint. When I was done, I yelled over to the bartender, who was now enemy number 1. This is reserved for tonight. If anyone sits here or takes that chair, you're fired. I didn't wait for an answer. Back downstairs, I put my anger to use, bellowing at my staff to move their asses. They looked at me like I was a ticking time bomb, although with the insane amount of rage I felt in my chest, I wasn't quite sure they were that off base. Needing to calm down, I stomped toward the bar, poured myself a shot of whiskey, and knocked it back before heading outside for a cigarette. The smoke soothed the fire in my throat when it should have fanned the flame.
I smelled her before I heard her voice. Lost in my head, I hadn't even noticed Gia open or close the door behind me.
Hey, there you are. Is everything okay?
Fine, I clipped out and inhaled again deeply until the ember tip of my cigarette turned a bright shade of orange.
I wasn't trying to stop Reese from working, if that's what pissed you off. I carried up a few bottles of rum knowing there was a drink special on the menu with rum in it tonight.
I responded in a more bitter tone than I'd intended. Why are you here?
I'm working tonight. I guess Carla didn't tell you? We switched tonight for Saturday night because she had something to do.
My face was blank. No, she didn't tell me. Why the fuck would anyone tell me anything around here? I only own the damn place.
You're in a mood. Do you want to talk about it?
No, Gia. I don't want to talk about it. I just want all of my staff to go about their business and keep the hell out of mine. Is that so fucking hard to do? She blinked a few times. Her face looked like I'd just physically slapped her.
No. That's not so hard to do, boss. Forgive me if I overstepped and gave a shit because you looked like you might be upset.
She turned to leave, stopping as she opened the door.
It won't happen again.
My mom showed up at 6 o'clock. I was talking to a DJ who stopped by to discuss the upcoming 4th of July party I'd hired him for when I saw her out of the corner of my eye. She smiled, spotting me, and it was the first time I felt my shoulders loosen enough to breathe comfortably today. Hey, Ma. I swamped her in a big hug. My mom was a tiny little thing. She liked to tease that I'd almost killed her giving birth to my 10-pound pudgy ass. My size was the one thing that I'd clearly gotten from my father that I didn't hate. Happy 52nd birthday. She smiled.
Shh. I'm 38 this year.
In all honesty, no one would blink twice if she said she was 38. Melody Rushmore kept herself in great shape with daily yoga and some sort of transcendental meditation that she always tried to get me to try out. Looking at her, people would never know that she had a tough life. The youngest of four children raised in rural Canada by an abusive father and alcoholic mother, she moved to New York City at only 18. She met my asshole father at 22 and fell for his bullshit. 18 months later, when she was 2 months pregnant with me, his true colors came out when he demanded she get an abortion. Before that, she'd had no idea that he was married. Definitely no clue that his wife had just given birth to a son of their own just 6 months earlier. Since dear old Dad wasn't about to own up to his responsibilities without a paternity test, Mom had to stop working at her dream job at the art gallery and find a job that provided insurance. She'd given up a lot for me, even before I was born. Is your easel in the car?
Yes, but I don't need to use it. I can just put a canvas on my lap.
Don't be ridiculous. Let me get you something to drink, and then I'll go grab your stuff from the car. I walked Mom to the bar, my eyes trained on the adjoining dining room, where some fuckwad in a cheap suit was checking out Gia's ass while she walked him to a table. The fucking universe is out to test my patience tonight. Distracted, I poured Mom a glass of wine that almost overflowed. Let me have your keys. I'll be right back. Cheap Suit was still molesting Gia with his eyes. On my way to Mom's car, I walked over to the table he still hadn't sat his ass down at. Everything okay here? My face did not look like it gave a flying fuck if it was. Gia's brows furrowed.
Fine. Did you need something?
I glared at Cheap Suit. Just for your customers to take their seat so you can get back to work. Gia glared back on his behalf.
Thank you. If we need any assistance, we'll let you know.
I stormed off to the car. At the door, Oak shot me a knowing grin that said he'd just watch the interaction I had with my employee. I pointed a finger at him. Don't say a fucking word. Then crashed the front door to the restaurant open. The gravel beneath my feet crunched like it was as pissed off as I was while I made my way through the parking lot to find Mom's car. Grabbing her paints, canvas, easel, and brushes, I slammed the trunk to her Kia and leaned against the car with my eyes shut. The sound of gravel-chomping footsteps interrupted my attempt at calming myself. Gia was headed right toward me again and looked as pissed as I felt. I looked up at the sky and grumbled, "Not again." Her tiny hands flew to her hips. "This is bullshit. You walking out of the restaurant when you should be inside working? I couldn't fucking agree more." She squinted at me. "You know what I'm talking about." I pushed off the car and took a step forward. "I'm not in the mood for your psychoanalysis bullshit, Gia. Go back inside and get to work." "I thought you were different than all the other Hamptonite jerk guys. But the truth is, you just wear different armor on the outside. On the inside, you're the same self-absorbed, narcissistic bastard they all are." "I'm self-absorbed because I want you to do your job and not stick your tits in the face of my staff and customers." If I'd thought she was pissed off before, her face contorted to a whole new level of angry. Her lips twisted into a scowl, her forehead pinched, and the color in her face turned a lovely shade of crimson. At that moment, it became clear that I was losing my fucking mind, because while I'd been pissed off and wanting to lash out at the world since I'd first saw that skinny bartender pass my office earlier today, suddenly Gia's seething changed my mood. I bet angry fucking her would be great. She stood in front of me, practically foaming at the mouth, and all I saw was me, holding a fistful of her hair, yanking hard as I plowed into her from behind, smacking her ass over and over. Fuck. "You're an egomaniac. You don't want me, but you don't want me to show anyone else any attention either." I stared at her, her words blurring as more visions became clear. Wrists tied to my headboard while she writhed under my tongue. I'd suck her pussy until she was on edge, just about to let go, then I'd lift her legs up into the air and onto my shoulders. Spreading her wetness from clit to crack, I'd lube up her tight little virgin ass, and then finger fuck the shit out of it until she was begging all over again. "Blah, blah, blah." At least that's what I heard. Gia's voice was going again, but I couldn't make out a damn word if I tried. "Are you even listening to me?" she barked. Not a fucking word, but turn around, bend over the hood of Mom's car, and I'll hear every scream I can wring out of you. God, I really hoped her ass had never been touched. Would she punch me if I asked right now? Do I give a flying fuck if she does? "What the hell is wrong with you?" she continued to stare at me like I had two heads. A dark smirk tugged at the corners of my mouth. "Can I ask you a personal question?" "What?" Her patience ran thin. My eyes dropped to the heavy heave of her chest, her nipples angrily protruding. God, she was sexy as fuck pissed off. Asking the status of her asshole would certainly elevate that. I took a step forward and leaned down so our faces were aligned. She stood her ground with a swallow. "Anyone ever enter through your back door, Gia?" Her pissed-off face morphed into confusion. "What? I came out the front door. Didn't you just see me walk out?" "I was talking about your ass, Gia." It took a minute for her to figure out what the hell I meant, but I knew the minute she did. A storm swept the calm sea blue of her eyes into dark, churning waters. She took a step back, and I thought she was turning to walk away. That is, until I realized she was only winding up to smack me straight across the face.
Chapter 11. He had some balls. Giant ones. The kind that I wouldn't miss if my foot happened to attempt a swift kick, which I definitely hadn't ruled out. I seated an older couple at a table and watched from a distance as the asshole flirted with a woman at the bar. He'd been standing there since he walked back inside with my handprint etched into his face. Obviously, the sting in my heart hurt more than what my hand had done to him, since he was already laughing and flirting, enjoying himself while I continued to stew. The woman got up, and Rush's hand went to her back. There was a familiarity in his touch and in their interaction. She was probably one of his summer fucks. He guided her to the stairs that led up to the roof while I gaped from a distance. She was definitely older than him. I'd guess late 30s or even early 40s. Unlike the other woman I'd seen hanging around the bar drooling over him, this one wasn't dressed like a whore. She had on a pair of jeans, rolled at the ankle, and a baggy, oversized t-shirt that hung almost to her knees. A pair of flip-flops with a big daisy flower on each donned her feet, rather than the usual stilettos his casual fucks seemed to like to wear. Are you shitting me? He had the audacity to speak to me the way he had outside, and now he just casually moved on to some May-December hookup right under my nose? No. Just no. Weaving through patrons, I made my way to the stairwell. Running up to the rooftop, I could feel my pulse racing. I stopped upon the sight of Rush pulling out a chair for his lady friend before sitting down across from her. They looked very comfortable together, and he was, dare I say, smiling like a fool. My blood was boiling. I watched intently as he walked over to the bar and ordered her a glass of wine, bringing it back to the table. My breathing was ragged as I continued to stand in the entrance observing them from afar, until I lost it. Storming over to the table, I huffed, "Are you kidding me right now?" Rush stood up suddenly and held out his hands in an apparent attempt to stop my outburst.
"Gia, this..."
"No!" I refused to back down. "I'm sorry. I'm not gonna shut up."
"Gia!"
he yelled louder. The bar was crowded, and no one seemed to be paying attention to this confrontation aside from Rush's date, whose eyes were fixed on me. Ignoring his plea, I got in his face. "What kind of a game are you playing? One second you're outside asking me if I've ever been fucked in the ass, and the next second you're upstairs whining and dining some woman? What's wrong with you?" His date cringed. Rush gritted his teeth.
"Stop."
"No, I won't." He lifted me off my feet. Before I knew it, I was being literally carried out of the bar area. Kicking my legs, I screamed, "What do you think you're doing?" He didn't answer me as he continued on to the hallway by the stairwell and put me down before backing me up against a wall. His eyes were searing into mine, but he said nothing as customers brushed by us to enter the rooftop area. Still bleeding jealousy, I panted, "Who was that woman?" He stared at me for several seconds before he finally spat out,
"That's not a woman. That's my mother."
A rush of blood suddenly coursed through my veins. "No, this couldn't be happening." "You're..." I cleared my throat. "You're lying. That's not... She's... I just... Oh. Oh, no. No." I held onto my head with both hands. "I didn't just say that. In front of your mother?"
"Yes."
He nodded.
"Yes, you fucking did."
I was panicked. "Oh, God, Rush. I'm so sorry. I didn't know." Rush looked like he was ready to blow.
"Get back to work,"
he demanded.
"And stay the fuck off the rooftop."
"Rush," I pleaded. Seething, he started to walk away, leaving me in the hallway. He turned around, and when he saw I hadn't moved, he barked louder.
"Go!"
I didn't know how long I'd been staring into space before Oak interrupted.
"You okay, Gia? You look pale."
It was just about closing time. Rush hadn't come downstairs once since I'd made an ass of myself. No pun intended, in front of his mom. Even though I'd wanted to just go home, somehow I'd managed to muddle through the rest of my shift. Turning to him, I felt like crying. "I screwed up, Oak. In a really big way." Oak pulled up a chair next to where I was standing.
"Wanna tell me what happened?"
"I really don't want to say."
"Let me guess. This has something to do with the boss."
Rolling my eyes, I said, "However did you know?"
"Wild guess,"
he sighed.
"I don't even know what happened, but I suspect it involved Rush blowing his top over something."
"Oh, he blew his top, all right." Oak looked almost entertained by my dilemma. He began to tell me a story.
"So, my daughter, Jazzy, she's in fifth grade, right? I got called to the school the other day because there's this boy who's been bothering her, teasing her,
pulling her hair, stuff like that. Yeah? The boy's mother showed up at this meeting, too. You know what she told me? She said all